I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB with Sebastian Currier, who has a brand new piece called Ether here at the Boston Symphony Orchestra, commissioned by the BSO and the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. Biba Skrida is the violinist for whom it was written. Sebastian, thanks a lot for stopping by and taking a little time with me after the very first rehearsal of this piece today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I guess when I read about the piece, and now I've heard some of it, there's the concept of ether, as I understand it, as you wrote very eloquently in your own note about it. And then there's the literal structure of the piece, the movements and this ethereal connecting tissue. Maybe I'll use that word for it. Tell me about your creative process and the beginnings of it. Did it start with the structure or did it start with the concept of ether?
Yeah, it started more with the structure, I would say. The basic idea is, too, you have a four-movement sort of traditional four-movement structure for a symphony or a concerto is usually three movements, but you get the idea. And how can you sort of rework that and rethink that? And I thought of, well, you could have these movements, but they're suspended in something else. So they're sort of recontextualized. I'm in general interested in, I mean, I grew up with music in the past. I'm interested in finding ways to make it new. And the way to do that often is to recontextualize it, right? And so it's this idea of you have these four movements that aren't, they sort of get lopped off at points and so on. But the main point is they're sort of clear structures, and then they're floating in this thing, I suppose, like, you know, planetoids float in the space or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And is this an idea you've experimented with in other pieces or that you've kind of picked up from other places? Or is this kind of a unique, kind of new thing to try out?
Yeah, I'd say it's unique for this piece in one way, but it has always interested me. In a sense, there's two modes to make a piece. Maybe this is oversimplifying a bit, but really, you can have a bunch of small movements, or you can have one big long thing, right? I mean, it sounds, you know, over-reductive, but kind of true. And both of them have their advantages and disadvantages and have implications. Short movements have great clarity of, but then they maybe don't have a full arc in the same way, whereas the opposite is true of one long movement. You can control that overall arc, but then maybe there's not clarity within individual sections. So I'm interested in finding a space that sort of combines them so you can have the sort of cake and eat it too of the clarity of the movements, but that then the relationship, which has to be very specific, very clear, I should say, between that and this amorphous stuff that sort of encases them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I think of a piece like, I don't know why the first thing that comes to my mind, maybe because it baffles me for so long, is the Liszt B minor sonata. This big, expansive thing that goes on forever, and I just, it's too much to unpack.
Yeah, which you just have to, in the end, to listen to those pieces, you have to let go and just go with it. I felt the same way. Well, Schumann Fantasy is sort of that way too, but it's, even though it's in separate movements, it goes on, but you have to go with it. But then it's very appealing then to have some piece that's these very specific movements, but you know.
But right, you're still carried through on something that gets you from one place to the next.
Exactly.
It's really a cool idea. You wrote it specifically for Biba Skrida. That was part of the commission you knew going in. And so as a composer, you write a lot, I imagine, for specific people, specific ensembles. How much did you get to know her playing, her personality, her what she's about before you began putting the piece together?
I certainly got to know. I listened to a bunch of her stuff, and you know, she's a great, great player and really wonderful to work with. But I'd say when I write, I don't write so much for a specific player in the sense that I know they will bring their own character to it, and I want it to have a future for other players. So it's not like, you know, you think of then, you know, 18th century writing for a specific singer who can only sing this note. You know, that, I don't know. I don't do that so much. But on the other hand, I did listen to her playing. I know what it sounds like. So it was in my mind. And, she's been just great to work with, and she sounds fantastic.
Did you communicate a lot with her?
We communicated some. She was in New York a few months ago, so we got together then and worked together some on that.
Yeah. For some composers, this is a tricky question to answer. Mm-hmm. Maybe for you or not, I don't know. But you just heard the first rehearsal. It's that moment for a composer
indeed.
It is a reality. It's not your mind. It's not your paper. It's not your computer program putting in the notes or whatever. It is the thing that is actually happening in sound. And I love asking about that first moment and what your impression is when you heard this for the first time.
It's always a scary, both exciting and scary at the same time in a way that's sort of hard to describe. But the one thing I'll say is over the years, I've noticed a change. Because when you're first figuring things out, then you're just waiting to see, you're surprised whether it sounds like what you wanted or not, right? Now I have enough control where it does sound like what I want. And the question is, then I wonder, well, why did I want that? You know, it's like that it pushes on to the next thing, you know, which is, you know, you never know. I mean, you know, different mood, different day on that stuff. But thus far, I was just meeting with some students too and talking. When you're having a first rehearsal, you learn you can't like sit back and enjoy the piece. You have to pay total attention and just try to make it better because it's very hard. It's one thing, you know, you hear some passage and you think, that's not right. But the thing is to analyze exactly what needs to be done, you know, and you only have a few seconds and I'll have a, you know, little time with Andres to tell him and he needs to tell the musician specifically. So I was mostly doing that stuff. What can I, you know, after a few weeks after the performance, then I'll start trying to figure out like, how does this, you know, work? You know, what do I think of it and so on?
Sure, sure. So when you enter into this situation where this piece is going to be performed for the first time, do you think about those moments? You say that you have control over, because through all your experience over, pretty much know what to expect.
Right.
You're not caught off guard too much.
Right.
But were there, does it make you think about the process? Do you think about how you got to this point during that rehearsal? Do you think about the moments that got you to that point and maybe even any unexpected turns and twists that you encountered as you put the piece together?
Right. It's more, you don't do a lot of reflection.
Not a lot of reflection.
No, because in a sense, it's really about,
it's the mechanics as you say, of
it's
the moment.
And it's the thing of the moving from the idea to the reality. It's always different. And I'd say here was the surprises of, oh, just the amount of work for with balance in a concerto. It's so obvious, but it's stuff that, you know, you're sitting there thinking, wow, I really should have marked that pianissimo rather than mezzo piano. You know, things like that. And I know, I guess you're right, because I understand why I marked it the mezzo piano, but then that was just a thought, you know. But when it came to the reality, it's no, you want to hear the violin there, you know. So it is that sort of practical shaping of things that I'm most, on a first rehearsal, you're most detail dealing with, because that's what you have to solve first.
Yeah.
And then you can move on to other things
of
timing and pacing and tempo. And of course, you know, they're reading it the first time. It takes a little while for the orchestra too, just for things to gel and so on.
I feel like we're fortunate in Boston anyway to have heard a lot of your music. The BSO has done some of your music before, and I know a lot of local ensembles and performers who have done your music, so I have a sense of your voice as a composer. Would you say that Ether is something that is an evolution of your voice from other pieces? There's sort of an organic growth from those pieces, or is this a little bit of a departure in any particular way that in directions you hadn't taken before?
I'd say this is pretty in line with work I've done before, which doesn't mean in the course of writing music in general, right, some pieces are more departures and so on. And this probably isn't, in part that I've been writing over the last few years more orchestral music. I wrote a violin concerto before, you know, so it's sort of, I feel like the things I've learned from those I've sort of followed through with and worked on, so there's more continuity there.
Sure, sure. And does the experience of this particular situation lead you into any sort of new thoughts that you're considering, that you're sort of cataloging or tucking away as you prepare for whatever it is that you're going to be working on next? I mean, you're already, of course,
working on something else next.
Who knows how many different things you're working on at one time?
I don't know yet, but I do feel, I do like this idea. I go back and forth with writing small movements, long things, and this is, I say, this hybrid. I've done it a few pieces. I can think of a violin and piano piece, Clockwork, for example, that does a similar thing, and it does interest me. And then it's sort of like this idea of finding a frame, right? It's all about frames, and I think that does suit me in terms of finding ways to relate to the past. It's like to not repeat the past, but be able to take things organically and develop them. So I do think that idea, I expect I'll probably revisit in other, you know, but each one has to be a different way to do it. But that idea of having some frame within which to look at something old in a new light interests me for sure.
Sure. And the I think that different composers maybe work in different capacities like this, but do you have a set of ideas that you're constantly carrying around with you, and then a commission comes along and you say, ah, this is the thing, and you sort of pull it over to yourself closer and you begin thinking about it further? Or in this case for Ether, you hear from the BSO and the Gewandhaus Orchestra, we'd love you to write a concerto for Biba. Do you just sort of start from scratch? Like, okay, what am I going to do?
Indeed. In that case, I would have just, because I wasn't expecting it, and it's like, you know, what am I going to do? But again, it was like, I think my first response was, oh, I had written one violin concerto, and I was interested to get to do that again, right? Because you think in the past, you know, composers got to write, you know, and re-practice and write a bunch of concerto, or look at Mozart piano concerto. Even the first ones were great, actually, but nonetheless, you know what I mean? So that's fun to revisit something. So, but I didn't have a plan before. But to answer your question more roundly, not just in this instance, sure, you have these ideas and you try to, you know, you get a commission and you try to then bend it into what you were thinking and so on. And sometimes people come to you for things that you weren't expecting, and it's great fun. It opens up another world that then becomes a tributary of something you might want to do again in the future. So I'm open to all of those possibilities, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a pleasure to have a composer with us here in the hall, and especially because I think a lot of members of the audience. It's not a life that they really completely relate to. It feels from the outside like it must be so solitary, that you spend so much time doing your thing and then kind of emerging from wherever you've been, and you know, here we are. Do you talk to audience members about the music when you're in a situation like this, when you're you know, going to be here for whatever, you know, however many performances?
Happy to, for sure. And I remember just from when I was here with Divisions, the audience here is great. It's a very warm audience. And of course, even if I sensed, I'm sort of making this up, right? But I sensed that even if new music wasn't their thing, they were open because the BSO was doing it and they were committed to the orchestra and had this very feeling of, you know, meeting you halfway, which felt really good. And of course, I'm happy to talk to anybody about it. It's great. But the other part is, yes, it is very solitary, and I do just go home and sit in my room all day, basically. So I like it. I mean, that's why I'm a composer, right?
You sign up for this. But right, exactly. Have you ever had the experience of a conversation with someone from an audience that has sparked a new idea for you, that has made you think, oh, now wait a minute, that's actually, I hadn't heard that before. I haven't thought about it that way before.
I can't say I would like to have a perfect example to tell you, but I can't say I have now. But it is always very interesting. I don't know if it gives me ideas, but what it is, you're always in your own mind, right? And when somebody else tries to relate, they're in their mind, and so it's like you do definitely get a different perspective of how people are hearing what you do, which is of course interesting to know. Not that you can necessarily respond to it. But it's a good reminder that there's this wider world out there of, you know, so I'm sure I do take some of those things in, but I couldn't say that I did something specifically with it.
Yeah, well, fair enough. It's rather an ethereal concept.
There we go, exactly.
Sebastian Currier, thanks so much for the piece of music. I think it's just gorgeous and fun, too. There's a lot of really, you know, kicking energy in it, which is fun. And thanks for taking some time to talk with me about it.
A pleasure. Thank you.